You are listening to the Fresh Take Network.
What it is, what it do. Welcome to Run Down the Throne here on the Fresh Take Network. Joshua Adam, I'm with Andy Ken Yar. Andy, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
I'm doing good. We have House of the Dragon episode 2 to talk about.
Yes, very good. It was. It's fun to kind of have Sundays be exciting again. We were actually doing fantasy football draft this weekend, and we were talking about when Game of Thrones was out, how Sunday evenings you were like sitting there in the first half of a football game, kind of hoping a blowout would happen so you could get out of football and into Game of Thrones. And, you know, obviously it's been about 3 years since we've had to do that. And it was funny that it became a topic of conversation in a fantasy draft that this was, you know, our new reality is our old reality.
And this was our last Thrones episode before the battle between them and Rings of Power, before that dynamic starts and the back and forth of that weekly starts.
Exactly.
And yeah, it's about to get really, really busy. We're going to talk about that on the rundown and do a fall television and movie preview. I don't think anything's going to be busier, though, than what this, at least for television, is than what this fall is going to be. And House of the Dragon leading that way. And it seems, at least for the first two episodes, pretty positive feedback.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it as, you know, it was the highest downloaded or viewed streaming show on its opening day in the history of streaming. You know, you had it shut down HBO Max for a chunk of time. I know you and I utilize a illegal streaming service that it actually shut them down because there were so many people trying to illegally get the House of the Dragon episodes. So, I mean, I think you see there's, I think it was you that was telling me that there was a video of a condo yeah. building in New York yeah. where every TV in the that you could see from a window was watching House of the Dragon. So, I mean, the cultural significance of this is still pretty high.
Yeah, that was pretty wild. I don't know how it happened, but the second episode was leaked Sunday afternoon. Some people to watch with some spoilers. I guess there was kind of spoilers. I don't really know how you really spoil this episode yet. Like, people are like, be careful of spoilers. I'm like, after watching, I'm like, I don't know. I guess spoilers, but it's a review podcast. So I don't know why you're listening to a show, reviewing a show and getting upset about spoilers. But I don't really, there's nothing really majorly to spoil here, particularly like that are just going to blow you away and ruin the episode other than like who he went and stuff like that. But I think we all kind of saw the direction that was going from the prior episode. So I don't think there was anything like hold the door or Arya killing a White Walker or Dany going fucking haywire. Like, I don't think there was anything like that in this episode.
Well, and the other side of that is, you know, because there is, because there is a book, it's all written. Like, you know, this is as spoilery as you can get. Like, this story is already out there. So, I mean, you know, you don't necessarily need to watch the episode for somebody to spoil it for you because it's all out there.
Yeah. All right. So we'll start off pretty basic here, Andy. Are the crab feasts, they go on the human legs and everything like that. We could talk about the crab feeder. Is this the new White Walkers is what I've been asked a lot?
I think that's kind of what they're positioning it as. I mean, it's really sort of the precursor to the next steps in all of this. It's the, you know, before you get to the actual, you know, Targaryens fighting Targaryens, this is the battle that happens along the way. It's not like he's going to be, I think, a factor throughout the course of many seasons of the show. I just think he's the focus, like the Battle of the Stepstones is really very much the Battle of the Bastards or whatever you want to call it, you know, the battle along the way. But I think once this is dealt with, you know, this just really gets you more into the Targaryen rebellion.
And what's the crab feeder's connection to the Targaryens?
So in the book, there really is no connection.
Right.
There's a lot of talk going on right now that, you know, maybe he is, because when you look at the stories, the Free Cities, so, you know, whether you talk about the Second Sons, you talk about the gold, the golden, we saw it in at the end of season 8, the Golden Army, where, you know, these are, in a lot of ways, are warriors that are descendant of royalty in different places, but are bastards or whatever. And maybe that's what this crab feeder guy is, you know, a Targaryen cast off or a bastard that hasn't been claimed or something along those lines. You know, maybe that's something that they've added to the show to give him a little bit more credence in terms of why he's doing this. But it's a tough one to, because there is no real precedent within the stories of the books.
So we saw more of the King of the Iron Throne again. So we had the sword on his back last time. Now there's stuff with his hands and a few other things. I saw the thing with the maggots and trying to eat away at that. I guess
we saw that we saw that cut on his finger at the end of the first episode, right? He's sitting there on the throne and he dips it. So you see the progression of that. And really you have to remember that this from episode 1 and episode 2 really 6 to 8 months has gone by between those two episodes. Yeah, so you know you have a bit of a time jump here. So you could see that, you know, it isn't just something that just happened from week to week. It's a pretty significant jump in time that's happened here.
Yeah, so I guess kind of what we talked about last week, you have to assume that this is the Iron Throne rejecting him.
Very much so. I mean, you know, there still is talk out there, like, you know, we talked about last week. You brought it up that, you know, is there somebody here trying to poison him, or is there something on the throne that somebody's put there? You know, I guess there's still that potential. I think it feels as though they're going to move along. You know, in the books, Viserys dies quite a ways along into the story. And maybe they're going to speed that little aspect up, and, you know, they've just come up with this means to get rid of him, to speed along the story. But, you know, whether it's going to be grayscale or it's some sort of poison that's in there, I think you've got all those options as you know, the way that this could be going.
Well, now as we've seen this, he kind of has multiple enemies, right? He has his brother and Daemon. He's an enemy. And then Lord Corlys,
yeah, you got it right.
Corlys, he's an enemy now, more or less, just because he went away his daughter, and we'll get into that in a situation. So, and then we have the kind of the crab guy as well. So he is starting to build up different enemies through these last few episodes.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll talk a little bit more about that, the final scene there with Daemon, because I think he really plays his hand that he's not necessarily against his brother. I think he's just looking for validation from him. So I really still feel like this is not a Daemon thing. But we can talk about that a little bit more later.
Well, you saw it when they go to, where is he from again? When they were at Dragon's Lair, right? Dragonstone. Dragonstone there. Yeah. And the princess comes there and kind of confronts him and says, like, if you want the throne, you have to kill me. And you could tell, like, he doesn't want to kill his family. He doesn't have that ill will. He's more bitter than angry and in a mood for revenge, more or less. Even with, you know, the woman that we saw, the, pardon for the term, but the whore in so many ways, he wants to marry her and do that stuff, and she's against it. So Daemon's having a very hard time of getting his way, and I think he's trying to be vindictive in little ways, like taking the dragon egg, but not being vindictive in sense of murder and killing.
Yeah, he's a bit of a spiteful dick, but he's not like an asshole. I think you really, where you really see that is like I said, is in that last conversation when he's sitting there with Corlys, and, you know, he's like, Corlys starts talking shit about his brother, and he's like, easy now, he's my brother, and I can talk about him in that way, you cannot. He's still your king, he's my brother, I can have those offhanded comments. He is protecting his brother from those comments from somebody else. It's like, you know, I can pick on him, but you can't.
Yeah, that's a big I mean, you kind of see the team upcoming, but again, like, where will the team, where will it go with, right? With Corliss, I don't think there's anything off limits exactly for him at this point now. He wanted to combine the kingdoms because his wife is the queen that never was and all that. So he's obviously getting the backlash on that side of things and trying to move himself up political. You're definitely seeing the chess moves by different sides, right, in this, whether it be the king of the hand. He's making hit chess moves, and now Corliss and the queen that never was, they're trying to make their hand. And obviously right now, Hightower is in the lead with the moves that he's making.
I thought that was just a great line where, you know, the king is talking to one of the members of the small council. And he said, you know, you sit on the highest seat in the realm, and no powerful man enjoys looking up. I just thought what a really great written line to really talk about how, you know, you have all these people on the small council who have their own agendas and have their own drive to sort of see how far up the totem pole that they can really get themselves. And it doesn't matter how loyal you think they are. Every single one of those guys has their own agenda. Like the small councils that you saw in Game of Thrones, you really didn't see this sort of the same sort of ambition from each one of those people that you really do here, whether it's Corliss, whether it's Hightower. You know, you didn't get that same sense that those people were basically coming for the throne all the time. Yeah. Whereas that is such a prevalent factor in this show.
Well, even with Hightower, you can tell when on Corliss, when he's trying to pawn off his daughter, the 12-year-old, to be the future queen to combine the houses, you know, you could tell that even he was obviously angry about that because he had been trying to, since the past episode, work it with his daughter to marry the king and get himself closer within that kingdom.
Right, because I mean, it's very interesting because, you know, really when you look at it, it's the whole story is really about bloodlines. You know, it's everybody has their own desire, maybe not necessarily for them to gain position, because that's what this move is, to marry your daughter into the king. It's not going to put you in a better position, but it's to move your bloodline closer to the throne. Mm-hmm. You know, to give your bloodline a chance at leading at some point. So it's very interesting that that's sort of the ambition of a lot of these guys is yes, it's partially to improve their standing, but it's really to move their bloodline as close to royalty or to the leadership position as they can. And, you know, I think that's a very unique aspect of this particular story.
We never really hear the Hightower name in Game of Thrones proper ever. So obviously there wasn't much of a legacy there left.
Yeah. I mean, Old Town really in that story is pretty, you know, out of the story. The only thing they really talk about is the Citadel, and that's obviously where Sam goes to train to be Maester. But that's really the extent of it. Whereas here in the earlier years, you know, Old Town is, you know, before King's Landing exists, Old Town is the largest city in the realm, and you know, it's not until King's Landing shows up that it diminishes a little bit, but it's still very much in that role. Now the flip side is before Aegon's conquest, Old Town still sits in Highgarden. So even though it's a very large city, it's a port city, it's still not the seat of power. The seat of power there sits in Highgarden with the family gardener before it becomes the Tyrells. So there is a, even though it's such a big city, it still doesn't even have sort of, it's not even the capital city in its own area of the Reach.
Right. And then, so in this one too, we saw like a little bit of the time jump, right? And then it, just by going by IMDb that people have and looking at some of the casting on that one, it seems that we will see the older Alicent and Rhaenyra.
The writer there and Alicent, they get aged up, what, probably, I would imagine, if not episode 3, maybe episode 4?
They're at least by IMDb, they're cast, and they're in this next episode of episode 3.
Yeah, And I think, you know, we talked about it, the first, I think, I believe it's the first six episodes were out there for people to, for the media to look at. Mm-hmm. So there is, those episodes are all out there. So I would imagine if IMDb says that that's the way it's going to go, that is the case. I'm actually, you know, I'm a little sad because the version of Rhaenyra in this right now, I think she is amazing. Like, she is a great actress. She suits this role perfectly. And, you know, I really like her, just the way she carries herself. You know, she really pervades her emotions in that very, very well. Like, you can really see the challenges that she's having just with the loss of her mother and her new position. And, you know, she has her own level of ambition. I don't know if it's necessarily ambition for the throne, but I think it's ambition for, you know, promoting her family and being, you know, as much as she can. And you're really seeing that switch from episode one to episode two. You know, episode one, she sits there and she says, you know, I want to fly around on my dragon and I want capes. And, you know, this one, she's, you know, she's throwing that idea out to her dad about, you know, hey, you have dragon riders, why don't you send us to the Septzones? You know, we can be your show of power. You know, she could really see she's kind of leaning into this position that she has and the power that she can actually wield within the realm.
I think we're about to kind of see a little bit of a battle between the two, going from friends to enemies.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you saw that on her face at the end of this episode when Alicent is named, when he says, you know, she's going to be my new wife. Just a visible betrayal, right? Because suddenly all the things that you saw her say when they're sitting in the Sept and, you know, she's talking about how, you know, you build this trust and you're doing all these things. And, you know, suddenly I think Rhaenyra is looking at her saying, well, like, you played me through all of this. Like, you had this ulterior motive and you were doing these things behind my back. And yet you were trying to get to see things from your side. And you were trying to, you know, explain to me how difficult it was when you lost your mother and that we had these things in common. And in reality, you were going behind my back, not as my friend, but looking for your own position. For your own family's position far more than you were caring about me, because if you were worried about me, you would have told me that this is what was on the play. Because she seemed very cool. She gets the idea that, you know, her father is going to remarry. You know, I think she had come to the conclusion that that was something that she could live with. And this is just an example of, hey, if you probably would have been upfront about this and you would have come to me and we would have talked about it as friends, I probably would have been okay with it. But instead, you chose to do this behind my back and build this relationship with my father, which, you know, obviously she's not going to be cool with going forward. And you know, I think you just saw that switch, you know, when she's looking at her father and her eyes dart to Alicent and you're like, oh shit, like, now you can see, she's like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah. I mean, and I give, you know, credit to the king there. At least both are very young women, so it's definitely in this age inappropriate, but it was someone that he seemed to have built up a relationship and did have a sense of feeling for, at the very least, right? He had talked about, like, I do enjoy our talks and all that kind of stuff. So it was someone that he had started to grow to, at least, I want to say love, but at least admire quite a bit. And so he did pick love, terrible and corny as that says, love over legacy in this situation, I believe.
Absolutely, because Lady Lena is by far the better political choice for him to move forward. But you can see it in how he talks about Queen Emma. You know, he talks about her with such, you know, devotion and respect and love. And you can see that that's a real part of his makeup. Like, yes, there's political aspiration behind him. Yes, he sees his, you know, his duty in terms of his duty to the realm. But in choosing a partner, he's resorting right back to this idea that, you know, hey, I want to be with somebody that, you know, I can talk to or relate to or whatever. And, you know, you could just see, you know, every time he talks about Lady Lena, you know, he's just like, well, she's so young. And, you know, you even have a member of the small council who's like, well, she'll mature, she'll age, you know, those things will change. And you can just see it on his face. He's like, yeah, but I can't get over that now.
Yeah, because at least, you know, with Alicent, he can sit down, he can have some of these conversations with her, right? That, as we've seen. With Lena, that's just not happening. I don't think he could get over, and I don't think anybody could get, like, yeah, like you were talking about before when we got on, like, well, she's still 15, but let's just say for his sake, she's a mature 15 to him, right? Where they can have conversations about stuff that he is enjoying. He did feel a sense of connection to her as his wife has drifted and had, you know, a partner in conversation that she's been able to have. Whereas with Lena, that just wasn't going to happen.
Well, I mean, anybody who has children, you know that the difference between a 12-year-old and a 15-year-old in terms of maturity and how you act is night and day difference. You know, I think they augmented that by the casting that they have. You know, the Lena, the actress playing her, is clearly a child. You know, the size difference, the physical maturity, all of those things is, like, shockingly difficult to watch. Like, it's cringeworthy to the nth degree. You know, whereas the two ladies that they've cast as Reyna and Renera and Alicent, you know, these are 19 and 20-year-olds in real life. And, you know, they just have so much more maturity to them. But I think, too, like, you know, Alicent is a, you know, she talks about it in episode one. She's a fan of books. She likes history. You know, these are all things that King Viserys is a big part of his life as well. You know, you see it, obviously, with the huge carving of Valyria that he has in his bedroom. You know, he's a fan of history and his family's history, and, you know, he has those elements that he can relate to with Alicent that maybe Lena is just, you know, just incapable of because of her age.
Yeah. I mean, and I think when we see the growth next episode, obviously we could, I don't know, see a position where they are trying to court into, you know, having a child and all that kind of stuff, because obviously she will have had quite the jump in time around there. Anything else really that kind of stuck out to you that I didn't fully get to?
Yeah, I mean, the one part, so I mean, a bit of a spoiler here, but, you know, so you hear in the talk,
it's a review show. It's all spoilers.
It's a review show. It's what's coming. It's a little bit about what's coming, but it's not really giving anything away. So Lady Lena, actually, you hear her asking King Viserys about Vhagar, the dragon. And, you know, her interest in Vhagar is legitimate. And in the books, she becomes the next dragon rider of Vhagar. So that should happen in the next episode or two. It doesn't last very long, but it is something that is coming. So I thought it was very cool how they queued that up. You actually, at the end, when they put the preview out for episode two, you do see Vhagar in that clip. And Vhagar is the second largest dragon in the history of Game of Thrones, behind Valyria the Black Dread. You know, you hear Viserys talk about how Vhagar isn't in the Dragon Keep because she's too big, and that she's, you know, nobody necessarily knows where she is, but she's living somewhere, probably on, I believe at this time, I think she's actually living on Dragonstone. But I think it's very cool that they kind of, They provide that little hint of her asking about Vhagar, and that this is, like, a legitimate thing for her. You know, she has this desire to be a dragon rider. She does have Targaryen blood. And, you know, her aspirations are fairly high. She's going after the biggest and baddest dragon in the land, and that's right. The one that she wants to ride. So I guess both... you know, as a dragon, as a mate, she's looking for the biggest and the baddest that she can find. So she's, you know, for a lady of 12, she certainly has high aspirations.
And I guess we'll see a little bit of a jump for her too coming up, I would assume.
Yes, even in the original trailers, you actually saw, you know, sort of the teenage versions of her and her brother Laenor. Mm-hmm. And so you do see that, those sort of aged up versions of those two characters as well.
So what have you thought about it so far, two episodes in, compared to, you know, you've read the books and everything like that? Like, how faithful has everything been so far?
It's been pretty close. I mean, they're taking a little bit of liberties with sort of the timelines of a lot of things. Mm-hmm. In the books, like I think I mentioned last week, you know, Rhaenyra and Alicent are actually about 10 years different. Alicent is older in the books. And in the books, they don't have this relationship, of the close relationship that they're showing here.
Okay.
But I think the closest this relationship allows you to see the transition of, hey, we were once very close, and now we became, you know, bitter enemies. So I don't mind some of the liberties that they've taken, and especially because the book is basically, it's like a third party textbook. It's, yeah, you know, somebody's impressions of that time. It's not like a factual story written as the people are doing it. But yeah, I think it's great. And, you know, I think they're moving the story along fairly quickly, which is good, because, you know, from where they are now to where you actually get into the Dance of the Dragons, you know, the blacks versus the greens, in the book, that's like 20 years goes by.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, there's a lot of ground to travel. So I don't mind that they're moving this along at a fairly brisk clip at this point, because, you know, I just think that's going to get us to where we want to be. This season, I think, you know, Battle of Stepstones, that's going to be the big, you know, the big confrontation. Maybe you get a little bit of the start of the fight between the blacks and the greens, between Alicent and Rhaenyra. But I do think that's, you know, that's the path that we're on so far.
I will give them credit. I just think for, you know, the layman, my that includes me, you know, I think they've done a very good job of, you know, obviously episode one had kind of the dump of a bunch of characters and stuff like that. But even that, I thought, you know, we're two episodes now, it hasn't overwhelmed. I thought particularly the first original Game of Thrones, they threw a lot at you and it's very, very confusing. Like, there's this character, there's this house. I think this has done a lot better job, maybe even learning from the past, of easing people that haven't read the books, that are just trying to watch a show. They've done a much better job of easing those type of people into watching this show. Like, this one wasn't a very confusing episode. They weren't introducing a bunch of new people, really, right? You had the basic people that you were following the last episode. You can understand the kind of storyline of succession on the throne and an angry brother and stuff like that. I think they did a really good job with all that kind of stuff. And then again, there's going to be pods like Mallory Rubin and the one that you sent me that are going to talk about this for 3 hours on a podcast. But I think for the layman side of things, which I'm in, I think they've done a really good job of these first two episodes to make you understand kind of what's going on.
I think one of the things that I really find very cool, and you know, maybe it's they learn from some of the mistakes of Dan and Dave. You know, when the first episodes of Game of Thrones, the dialogue and the just the tone and how the characters spoke to one another, they had very much that old English sort of royalty type conversations in just how they spoke. And as you got further and further along, a lot of that went away and it just became like modern people talking modernly. I really like that they've gone back to that. Like, they're really sort of embracing the age of this, you know, that this is a feudal society where, you know, you do have these the class differences and, you know, people are going to talk to each other in a certain way. Really enjoyed that they've gone back to that, because, you know, they, like I said, you know, some season six on, you know, they've got almost a little too modern, a little too slick, and you lost some of the ambiance and the you know, the feel of where this really was in the civilization at the time. And they've done a really good job of really sort of getting back to that element. The other thing I want to bring up is, you know, in the scene where Otto Hightower goes to Dragonstone and he confronts Daemon, you know, on the wall of Dragonstone. And when you see Caraxes come down, you know, just the idea now that you know, each dragon has their own sound, their own feel, their own look. Like, they're giving these dragons way more of their own personality, which I think is awesome. Because, you know, really, you know, as we talked about before, you know, whether it was Drogon or Rhaegal or Vhagar or Viserion in the original Game of Thrones, they basically looked exactly the same, sounded exactly the same. They were slightly colored different. Whereas here, you're really seeing them lean into the fact that, you know, I think there's supposed to be, you know, 19 dragons in the whole series, and they are really focused on giving each one of them their own personality and their own feel, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, you're definitely getting that feel. I mean, even with Daemon's Dragon, you got the feel like if he really wanted to, he could probably have taken out half the fleet or more than half the fleet with his dragon with how powerful it is.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, it was great. I mean, you see, and then the visual of Cyrax coming in under the clouds, you know, it almost looked like a torpedo coming under just under the surface of the water. And when it comes up, it's just a, you know, the other thing I think is really cool is that this is a time and an age where dragons aren't really that of a shock. I think you saw it on Kristen Cole. His face was like, what the hell? You know, he's obviously new to Khorne. He's new to King's Landing. So he's not maybe not as accustomed to what the dragons are. You know, it really brought me back to the scene where Jon and it comes to Dragonstone for the first time. And Drogon swoops up over the wall and he goes like scattering to the ground. And, you know, you see everybody else is like standing there like, what's wrong with you? Like, why are you on the ground? And, you know, Tywin goes over and he's like, you know, gives his hand. He's like, you know, I'd say you get used to them, but you don't really do. But, you know, here is a time where dragons aren't that big of a shock, where, you know, people expect to see them. But again, you do see it on Kristen Cole's face where he's like, holy crap, what is this? You know, I'm here with a sword and suddenly you expect me to what, fight the dragon? Like, I might be out of my league here.
Just a little bit.
And really, the best flex line ever when Daemon comes down and he says, he calls him Sir Crispin. And he said, oh, I'd forgotten your name. And he says, maybe you remember I'm the one who knocked you off your horse.
Yeah.
That's about as classy a flex as you're going to get. And Daemon took it pretty well, but you could see he was probably like, yeah, that stung just a little bit. You know, can't really say much back
to
that.
Those two will be butting heads more as we go forward, I feel.
Absolutely.
Yeah. A few other things here. So with Alicent, we talked about, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up, so we talked about the king and how he, you know, has admiration and respect and, you know, maybe love for her. But how do we think she feels about the entire thing? We haven't really looked at her perspective of everything. Of obviously her father kind of forced her into this situation. You know, there has been the speculation online about, you know, how close Rhaena and her really are, and maybe, you know, that's just kind of fanfic, I think, more or less, that you and I have kind of talked about off air. But realistically, just on her side of how comfortable she is with, I think she maybe looked at the king as a friend. But I don't think she kind of propelled herself into this side and how comfortable she will be going into all of it.
I think the one part that I think they've done a pretty good job in explaining is, you know, with her losing her mother and the king losing his wife, you know, I think that's their common ground, right?
Yeah.
Like they've both lost this person who's hugely important to them. And they've kind of gotten to a place where they're like, hey, you know, we're coming from the same place. You know, in episode one, she says, you know, all these people came and talked to me in riddles, and really all I wanted to say was that they were sorry for me. And you know, she says to the king, she says, you know, I'm sorry for what has happened to you. And I think that's their point of true connection. You know, yes, they have history and they have, you know, this interest in their past and in their houses and in Valyria and all of this other stuff. But that's their true connection point, is that they both come from a place where they've lost somebody hugely important, and they want somebody that they can talk to, that they can attempt to take steps to move forward and move on from. And that's really what they, I think, they become for each other. So I feel like this is a legitimate relationship. I think, you know, yes, you know, Otto is a little bit shady in terms of how he sort of jammed her into this situation, but I think in how the two have actually related to each other, I do feel that connection is sincere.
Yeah, we will kind of see. And I mean, when she gets older too, obviously she will have grown more into that place, as we kind of saw somewhat of a relationship defined. Obviously, you know, there is a side of the internet right now that really wanted the two to be together, and they had that kind of a tease, but that, I think, was just more of the two of them playing things up and the show kind of misleading you, where I don't think there is any LGBT relationship kind of going forward. I do think there'll be plenty in this show. I just don't think that's going to be one of them.
Well, yeah, I did see an interview between the two with the two actresses, and they said, you know, they really did play that up. You know, and you know, it wasn't part of the story, but they played up that aspect of their relationship and of their friendship. And I think, you know, in listening to a couple other podcasts where, you know, it's females running the podcast, and they've all sort of mentioned this idea that, you know, if you put a bunch of girls together in a room, you could get that impression from them at all times at that age. Like, that's just the nature of girls being girls. And you know, they do it for attention, or they do it because, you know, they can relate to each other at that age a little better than they relate to men. But there is a closeness that exists between them that, you know, I guess if you're just looking at it from the outside, it is pretty easy. You know, one podcast that I was listening to, she's like, you know, if you see me and my friends and you don't think that we're gay for each other, then we're probably not that close of a friend. But it's just the nature of how people, I think, you know, girls at that age. You know, I think it is something that's pretty easy to read into, but I think it's pretty easy to understand as well.
And then lastly, we have a title card sequence. It's back.
Yes, you got the original Game of Thrones song. I'm very happy that they didn't make a change. You know, I know there was a lot of people who were like, oh, there should be a renewed, updated version of the song. But, you know, to me, I just look at it and I was like, it doesn't matter what Star Wars show you get. It's the same Star Wars song. And if they all of a sudden started to mess around with that, I would be like, what are you doing?
Exactly.
That Game of Thrones song, it's very iconic and very easily recognizable. And this is still a Game of Thrones story. You know, this is still George R. R. Martin's writing. I don't think it's something that needs to be adjusted or updated just because it's a new story. I think the people who are looking for that are just, you know, that's just wrong. Again, you know, that standard of that music means something, and it's so relatable, and it's so iconic that it's great to just hear that entrance again.
So we've only already had two episodes in. We head to episode 3 next week. Still 7 episodes to go, and like I said, next week we start the big battle between Rings of Power and Game of Thrones with a double content for a lot of sites. Not ours yet, so I haven't found anyone for Rings of Power yet, but I know Andy, you will be tuning in for that.
Sure will.
All right, everyone, so we will be back next week for episode 3 of Rundown the Throne. Until next time, folks, cheers and enjoy the day,
people. Bye-bye.
You are listening to the Fresh Take Network.